Girl, this message is sponsored by Greenlight. We all know this. Greenlight is the debit card and money app for families that helps kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely.
Yeah, and also the parents are involved too. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on kids' spending and saving.
So this is, I say this every week. We have this with Daisy. I love it. You can customize the debit card. We've got a picture of Golden on it. I love talking to Daisy about money. I never had any of that financial planning when I was a kid. Nobody taught me anything. I love getting to like go over the app with Daisy. She can see what's in her account. She can see us using the allowance feature, so she sees that she gets her allowance every week, and then we can talk about what she wants to save for and what she wants to spend her money on.
It's demystifying it.
It is,
you
for
know?
Sure.
And then kids and teens, too, can build money confidence and skills in a more fun and accessible way.
Exactly. And maybe, girl, that's why millions of parents and kids, just like me and Steve and Daisy, are already learning about money on Greenlight, the number one family finance safety app.
Yeah, they also have the chores feature, where you can set up one-time or recurring chores. You can customize it to your household. You can reward kids with an allowance for a job well done. We're all keeping track.
She asks about it every single week. Every Friday as we're getting into the weekend, it's macaroni and cheese and Greenlight time.
Look, girl after my own heart.
So fam, start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/TCO.
That's greenlight.com/TCO to get started.
Greenlight.com/TCO and customize that debit card.
That's right.
My spelling is atrocious.
It is.
I don't even know how to spell atrocious.
Well.
Do you?
Yeah.
Spell it.
A-T-R. Whatever. I'm not the one on trial here. The Strangler is.
Because I'm like a tro-riotous.
Yeah. Well, you also like tweet things and then they get a big reaction. But I'm like, there are 16 typos on this topic.
You know what I have to say to that?
What?
Jillian Pensavalle.
Patrick Hines. I wonder if people really think I'm like, what? And like, I don't know what you're going to say.
Girl, before we get to the show,
yes,
you want more of Jillian and me, say it with me. And who can blame you?
Why wouldn't you? Something, right? Yeah. Something along those lines.
Join the Patreon, you guys. Over 100 full bonus episodes to download like the second you sign up.
Yeah, like all the series you want us to do, like Making a Murderer and The Jinx, they're all there.
Yeah, the Staircase Serial, Lorena. You think I can't rattle them off?
By this point, if you can't, then what are we doing?
Jodi Arias, the Lacey Peterson one.
Yeah.
You guys, the Lacey Peterson one maybe is my favorite one we've done so far because we disagree, but then we also disagree with ourselves.
Uh-huh.
We don't know what's going on.
No one knows anything. It's a mess. Come join us, won't you?
Join the Pates, you guys. It's so fun. We love it so much. Patreon.com/truecrimeobsessed.
Yeah, ringtones and like AMA is fun stuff over there.
Here's the one thing we haven't asked for in a little while,
what?
You guys. If you're a new listener and you haven't yet gone to iTunes and given us that 5-star review.
Oh, right.
We're a little over 13,000 reviews. I'd really love to get to 15,000.
Oh, that would be nice. A nice round number,
a
right?
Nice 15. Like, that would be, that would mean a lot to me.
Sensible 15,000.
Yeah.
Come on.
Girl, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about part one of Who Killed Garrett Phillips.
So you guys, part two is available right now on the Patreon, ad-free at the $5 level.
Mm-hmm.
So we do that for our Patreon fam, so you guys don't have to wait till next week to get the second half of this crazy story.
Right.
It'll also be our regular episode in the regular feed with ads next week.
Yes.
It's been a minute since I've been like head over heels about a documentary. I loved this one.
Yeah, I agree, which is weird because it just made me so mad.
So mad.
But you know, I'm all about like important stories needing to be told and let's get ragey, shall we? Let's do this.
The narrative of this case has been simple. It's about 30 minutes in Potsdam.
It was around 5:00.
I got a phone call. Something's happened to Garrett.
I have both units on scene with an unresponsive 10-year-old male.
The scene was handled as a crime scene.
The mother is Tansy Cyrus.
Tandy's ex-boyfriend, Nick Hillary, was suspicious.
Garrett didn't like it. Those two butted heads.
We have a strong suspect at this point.
Here's a kid that sits in the way of your relationship. You've got some problems.
Hillary is responsible for Garrett's death.
No doubt in my mind he did it.
Nick Hillary.
Hillary.
Hillary. Hillary. Nick's the guy.
I'm 100% certain.
Am I living in a dream right now, or this is really happening?
As a person of color, you're told, don't talk to the police.
Nick called me saying, the cops won't let me leave. You don't strip search someone naked for anything.
You do have to raise questions as to why they chose Nick Hillary.
He's right out of a movie, Nick's dating the sheriff's ex-girl.
You have John Jones holding Tandy's hand.
There have been theories that Garrett had been horsing around with friends. Those theories were pushed aside.
There's no match for the DNA, nothing tying Nick to the crime.
Prosecutors don't want to solve this case. They want to get a conviction.
To tell you I'm scared would be an understatement.
Either Nick Hillary did this, or someone else did this. Either one of those options are frightening.
Justice for Garrett is seeking the truth.
So we start in a courtroom and we get some amazing quotes right away.
Oh, but wait, are we going to start with a bailiff picking up a brick and banging it on the desk to bring the court to order?
No.
Did you miss that?
I totally missed that.
It looks like the bailiff just brought it in from the parking lot with him. And he was just like, everyone shut up. The judge is here.
I was too busy transcribing this quote where it's like some lawyer or whatever is just like, look, this whole thing is about a group of bungling, incompetent cops from upstate New York on a razor thin amount of evidence. And basically convicted this guy because he was black. And I'm like, oh, shit.
We're off and running.
Bungling, incompetent cops. Sign me up. Let's drag him. Let's do it.
One of these lawyers also, like, the second lawyer says, look, deaths are always tragic.
Sure, yeah.
And then I went, oh, God. As if, like, the title of the movie didn't give it away.
Yeah, what are you new here?
I forgot.
What do you think you do?
He's a 10-year-old boy. I was like, oh, God, he really dies.
Right. And the point is, he's like, yeah, we have to catch somebody, but it has to be the right person that we have to catch.
Yeah.
We can't just ruin two lives can't be lost here.
Right. Yeah.
We can't just get someone because you want us to. It has to be the right one. Right. Welcome to the court of law, you dummies.
So we see right away, we meet this adorable girl. Her name is Marissa Vogel.
I love her. That eye makeup, that eyeliner is amazing.
You know she subscribes to FabFitFun.
Those lashes. Oh, my God. So this all takes place at 100 Market Street.
Yeah. And so more about Marissa. Like, she was saying that she and her boyfriend moved into this apartment together. They were going there to go to college.
We found our apartment at 100 Market Street at the beginning of the summer of 2010. It was not like your typical college apartment. It was clean. It looked like you could live in it, and it was homey. And the whole building was well-kept, and it felt very safe.
And, you know, she says it's a cozy, quiet town. Everyone knows everyone, the usual.
It looks super cute.
Yeah, and she says that they shared a wall, but she could never really tell what was going on the other side of the wall. Just, like, muffled noises, but the shared wall is important.
Are we going to talk about Sharon Harris?
Sure.
So Sharon Harris is this, like, pretty blonde girl, and her boyfriend lived at 100 Market Street. He lived, like, in the back building. She becomes important, too, because everyone in the building either hears or sees something. So just remember Sharon Harris.
Yeah, so let's go through Marissa's day.
Okay.
On October 24th. 2011. Raining, normal day.
I actually came home earlier than I was normally coming home at that time. I arrived home around 4:15, 4:20, and we started to cook dinner. Actually, Sean cooked dinner.
The whole process took about half an hour. So about 5 o'clock, everything got plated up, and we went to our bedroom to eat and watch a TV show.
We watched Dexter. We're big fans.
Just a couple things to break it down. What kind of monsters are making dinner at 4:40 in the afternoon?
I don't know, man. Well, maybe they had a crate. I don't know. Maybe they're just like, I'm coming home. I just want to eat. You want to eat now?
Yeah.
I'm hungry now. Let's just eat
I
now.
Guess. And then you like take it into the bedroom and sit and watch Dexter.
And like, what was that? Season 6? I know. Come on. So now Shannon is saying, too, we get Shannon's timeline. And again, 5 o'clock, like right before dinner, early eaters at 100 Market Street. And they're changing Andrew's tire. Andrew is her boyfriend.
While Andrew was underneath the car, I kept hearing multiple noises, could not figure out what it was. I kept looking up there, couldn't see anything.
They were hearing noises from Garrett's apartment.
Right.
And they had a direct view up to Garrett's back window.
Right.
Important to remember.
So then back to Marissa.
While we were watching the show and eating, we weren't really chit-chatting anymore, so we were just listening to the show, and that's when we heard the running and the crash.
There was silence after the crash. And a few seconds later, we heard a moan for help. And it sounded like either ow or no.
I mean, this was just hard to listen to.
Right. And Marissa's like, it was a child. I don't know if it was ow or no, but she distinctively heard help.
And I have in my notes in huge block letters, like, please, please, please tell me you went and investigated.
They do.
Yeah. Marissa is a total hero.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with Marissa.
They go right over. Yeah. Pause, Dexter, boo boo, whatever the TiVo sound is. you could have kept it going. You didn't miss much.
When I knocked on the other door, I heard a slight noise behind the door. I couldn't tell you what it was, but then I heard a click. And it was one of those things where my mind instantly knew that it was a lock clicking.
She hears the front door lock clicking.
And the thing that, like, in the horror movie version of this, the murderer is right on the other side of that door.
Looking through the peephole.
That is so fucking terrifying to
me. So remember, it's 5 o'clock. They hear it. They're watching Dexter or whatever. By 5:08.
Yeah, it's almost bedtime.
Right. Oh, yawn. By 5:08, Marissa's on the phone with the cops. She's got it.
It sounded like something fell, and then it was either no or help. So, like, It was a little weird.
Okay, I'll have somebody check on it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So she calls at 5:08. By 5:14, Officer Wentworth is on the scene. What's going on?
So this is also very important. At 5:15, Officer Wentworth arrives to the apartment. He listens at the door and doesn't hear any noise. He then knocks again. This is on-screen text, which is why it sounds like I'm reading a script.
Right, because you are.
Because I am. He then knocks on the door and he hears what sounds like someone starting to walk around.
Right, so he's not getting a response from the person in the apartment. So at 5:21, the dispatcher, the 911 dispatcher who spoke to Marissa, calls the landlord, Rick Dumas. So, like, 3 minutes go by and Officer Wentworth is like, I don't have time to wait for this landlord. Officer Wentworth can hear movement in the apartment.
Yes. But it's 5:24, and that's a very important moment to remember.
Yes.
5:24, he's now, because he knows someone is in there, he's like, bitch, answer the fucking door.
Right.
And he's pounding on that shit with the nightstick.
So by 5:33, the landlord shows up, and I'm like, all right, he didn't make them wait that long. Sorry. Sorry,
hey,
landlord.
Hey, Dumas, do you think he's spent his whole life being called dumbass?
Yes, I do. I do. And I think that sucks. I think it's a real low bar to tease someone about their name. Just saying.
Heinz ketchup? Come on. Life was miserable for me. And
that's
in
the
like
meanest
first grade.
You got?
That was not even close. But just name related.
Yeah. I was like...
I was like a little chubby, poor gay kid. You think Heinz ketchup is the worst?
And you sounded like this since birth, probably. So then the dispatcher tells Marissa, like, girl, you were right. There is an emergency at that location.
Marissa?
Yes?
They do have an emergency on that location. Could you assist me by going down and waving down the rescue squad when they arrive?
Yes, I could do that.
Thank you very much.
The rescue squad gets there. It's an unresponsive male, about 10 years old. They're trying to do CPR. So then we start to hear the name Tandy Cyrus.
Yeah.
She is Garrett's mother.
Yes.
And they can't find her. They have no idea where she is. But the minute the dispatcher hears that name, they're like, whoa, wait, isn't she John Jones' ex-girlfriend? And I'm like, who the what?
The mother is Tandy Cyrus. We don't know the child's name at this time. She's not here. We haven't been able to locate.
Okay. Isn't she John Jones' ex-girlfriend?
Yeah.
Wonder if he's got a number.
Then they get the chief of police on the phone, and he's like, Tandy Cyrus, you say, how do I know that name?
And the dispatcher's like, bitch, it's John Jones' ex-girlfriend. And I'm like, who is John Jones? Just to note, no one else was in the apartment when the cops finally got in and they saw Garrett.
Right.
So, like, the person moving around is gone.
Exactly.
So now everyone, the entire town, is trying to get in touch with Tandy. It's like, where are you?
Where is she? So then we finally meet John Jones, and he's like two camera giving an interview, and he's saying,
some parents, I guess, apparently told her, where have you been? Something's happened to Garrett. You need to get to the hospital. And then she immediately thought of me first and called me because, you know, I've always been dependable with Tandy. She can count on me.
So John is the sheriff's deputy.
Right.
And her ex. Or is he?
Look, I had this note for later, but I was like, this guy is really fucking problematic.
I don't like him at all.
No.
He is very involved in this, and I think that also means he's involved in this.
I totally agree with you.
I'm saying it.
Yeah. So we see, it's horrible. We see a picture of Garrett, like, on the gurney, and they pronounce him dead at 7:18 p.m. We learn he was 12 years old.
Right. And the cause of death is strangulation and suffocation. Now, just a quick note about that. We've learned that is a super, super personal thing.
Yes.
That is not a robbery gone wrong. That's not what it is.
Right. So now we see Garrett's grandparents, and they are his dad's parents. And we learned that Garrett's dad died of an aneurysm when Garrett was about 3.
Yeah. And his paternal grandparents are saying things like, you know, they were very close. They spent a lot of time together. And I think the grandmother says, we know so much. And I'm like, what? You know so much about what? Like, what are, like, what?
I used to come every single day. Now I come up usually once a week until it gets nice weather. And then I hook them up and have coffee with them in the morning, just thinking and drinking my coffee.
I mean, as a grandmother, like, to see your son and your grandchild mm-hmm. die and to still be standing, that is some kind of strength that I don't know that I possess.
Yeah, both under, like, incredibly tragic circumstances. It's just really, there's some pretty strong people. Unless they're monsters. We never know. We just started. I don't know. Speaking of monsters.
So we meet this guy, Mark Murray.
Oh, I hate him.
He's the lead investigator. And like, you never know what these people's roles are when you first meet them. And you're kind of like, he can't be like a bad guy. Because why would he be giving an interview to the documentary if he's a bad guy?
Because he's that bad.
I know.
That he thinks he's not a bad guy. He's a fucking bad guy.
It's true. So he's the lead detective on this. And he tells us the night of the murder, he was at a soccer, like his younger brother's soccer game.
Whatever.
And he gets called.
Whatever. Sucks.
Obviously, it's immediately suspicious, so there's a lot of questions in your mind, like, why does a 12-year-old just doesn't die? We had the state police were called immediately. Notifications were made. We had no idea what we had.
So now, like, we're back to the scene, right? And
yeah.
While they're photographing the third bedroom, the officers notice that the blinds on the window are bent outward.
They're, like, on the second floor, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, there are cracks on the ledge outside and footprints that show, like, okay, someone jumped and broke the sidewalk or whatever.
And it's a long fall. I mean, it's, like, a solid, you know, 20 feet or whatever.
Right.
And we cut back to Shannon Harris. Remember, she was the one who was outside working on her boyfriend's car with her boyfriend.
Yeah.
She had the direct view of that window. Mm. And she knows that they left where they were at 5:20.
Mm-hmm.
So we get the timeline at some point that he fled at 5:21. So this guy must have been looking out the window.
Waiting for them to leave.
Like, what am I, like, there's a cop on the other side of the door. He knows that. This cop's going to bust in.
Banging with the patrol stick. Right. Open up.
Offer the crumpy.
Yeah. Totally.
and then finally they leave and he jumps out the goddamn window.
Right. So now, back to John Jones.
Yeah.
If I may.
John Jones is like the cop who's the ex-boyfriend of the mom.
Mm-hmm. He tells us, again, with a straight face, like, dude, do you hear yourself?
I know.
He's like,
I think we were just all in shock and didn't know how to take it. And I believe it was 3 or 4 hours later that I'd called my girlfriend. I said, I'm going to stay with Tandy and assist her through this difficult time.
I call my current girlfriend and I say, honey, I'm staying with my ex-girlfriend right. to help her through this difficult time. I really don't like him.
I know.
I just don't like him.
Yeah.
I think it's all bullshit. Like, why do you want to meddle?
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't like him.
Does he get a bell?
Yeah, fuck him. God, throw the whole thing at him. More people I don't like. You uh-huh. want to just go down the list?
Yeah.
Gary Snell is from the state police. So here's the thing. Like, the local police and the state police are now working together. So this guy, Gary Snell, he just inserts himself into this situation.
Yeah, and I also have a note that, like, we don't actually meet Snell. We just see a photo of him. And I was like, why is Mark Murray here, but like, the Snell guy isn't here?
Yeah.
Gary Snell from the state police had stopped on his way home because he resides in the Parrishville community as well. It's a tight-knit community. I think he had stopped at the family's house. They had their suspicions. They said the only person, they can't think of anyone who would want to hurt Garrett, number one. There were some things about Tandy's ex-boyfriend, Nick Hillary, that really concerned them. And so they shared those concerns with him.
So the grandparents are saying, like, we think we know who did this. Remember, she was dating this guy, Nick Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
We never liked him. And we think that he may be the one who did this. And we think this because we know that Garrett and he did not get along.
Yeah. Also, Tandy's white and Nick Hillary is black.
And the funny thing is, we didn't necessarily learn that. No one ever says it explicitly at this point.
Yeah. No, just their actions speak volumes.
Right.
And then, like, Nick Hillary is with us. He's our narrator here.
So we start to see right away that, like, they don't have other suspects. They are just focusing on this Nick Hillary guy.
Yeah, and because it's a 12-year-old, you know, it's sort of all hands on deck. So we get, like, this DA investigator calling Mark Murray, the lead investigator, and he's like, so do you have all the suspects involved? Is it one? Like, what, you know, like, what's happening, girl? And Mark Murray, that idiot, is like, well, we have very strong feelings about certain people. Beat, well, one person.
We got some strong feelings about certain people, or one person, but we need that autopsy today, and we need the cause of death, but there's one person in particular we want to talk to.
The whole point of this section is that, like, they were never looking at anybody else because we start to see all these other possibilities. We're seeing social media tweets that, like, Garrett had friends over and they were horsing around and it was an accident.
There's this thing, you guys, the knockout game.
I used to play this game.
You what? Are you kidding me?
No, no, because maybe it's not the same game. But at high school dances, when other boys were busy dancing with girls and I was busy staring at the boys dancing with the girls,
uh-huh,
and I was bored,
right,
I would like sit to the side, and there was a game that we used to play where you would like breathe all the way out and somebody would push their hands on your stomach and you would sort of pass out for like a second.
Why don't you just do whippets like everybody else?
Whippets scared me because you could die.
Whatever. Yeah, because you can't die from that. That's not the knockout game. That's something ridiculous and horrible. But the knockout game is,
I used
like,
to play that with Emro Weisler. He had the best hair. I was obsessed with him.
Okay. So the knockout game is when people would basically like run up to an unsuspecting victim and sucker punch them and try to knock them out.
What?
Yeah. So the thing is, there were all these theories. Maybe the other kids did it. You know, like Garrett wasn't well-liked. Whatever the theories, yeah, were. But all of those theories were pushed aside once they had their eyes set on this guy, Nick Hillary.
Girl, this message is sponsored by Greenlight. We all know this. Greenlight is the debit card and money app for families that helps kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely.
Yeah, and also the parents are involved too.
Yes.
Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on kids spending and saving.
So this is, I say this every week. We have this with Daisy. I love it. You can customize the debit card. We've got a picture of Golden on it. I love talking to Daisy about money. I never had any of that financial planning when I was a kid. Nobody taught me anything. I love getting to like go over the app with Daisy. She can see what's in her account. She can see us using the allowance feature, so she sees that she gets her allowance every week, and then we can talk about what she wants to save for and what she wants to spend her money on.
It's demystifying it.
It is,
you
for
know?
Sure.
And then kids and teens, too, can build money confidence and skills in a more fun and accessible way.
Exactly. And maybe, girl, that's why millions of parents and kids, just like me and Steve and Daisy, are already learning about money on Greenlight, the number one family finance safety app.
Yeah, they also have the chores feature, where, yep, you can set up one-time or recurring chores. You can customize it to your household. You can reward kids with an allowance for a job well done. We're all keeping track.
She asks about it every single week.
I would.
Every Friday as we're getting into the weekend, it's macaroni and cheese and Greenlight time.
Look, girl after my own heart.
So fam, start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/TCO.
That's greenlight.com/TCO to get started.
Greenlight.com/TCO and customize that debit card.
That's right.
Girl, Quince is back. Look, we know that we love them for the sweaters and the clothing and the bags, but we are talking about the travel essentials made by Quince. High quality. I'm traveling all the time. I am obsessed.
Yeah, high quality, fair prices.
Yeah, totally.
Just want to clarify that.
Like all Quince items, these items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
Yeah, and they only work with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. But here's what they have for your travel accessories now.
Don't I know all about it?
You love this one. The expandable carry-on hard shell suitcase.
This I live by. I only travel with this when I'm on the road.
And they have it in a lot of sizes, like 21-inch, whatever,
yes,
you need,
yes,
a lot of different colors.
They've also got this washable carry-on luggage cover. You know how all your carry-ons look exactly the same?
Yeah.
Yours now stands out.
Yeah, and you can clean it instead of wiping it down. It's like a washable cover.
Nothing in the world is more filthy than the baggage carousel.
Disgusting. They also have packing cubes. They have a jewelry case, a toiletry bag, and my favorite, the Revive nylon camera crossbody. Again, you can take it and look cute in your airport fit.
They do everything I love. The sweaters, the bags, the luggage. Oh my God.
Amazing.
So fam, for your next trip, treat yourself to luxe upgrades you deserve from Quince.
Go to quince.com/TCO for 365-day returns plus free shipping on your order.
That's quince.com/TCO to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/TCO.
So back to that guy, John Jones.
Yeah. So it's 8:30 a.m. the day after the murder. Tandy, the mom,
yeah,
is being interviewed. And the on-screen text says, first of many interviews. Oh, okay. All right. But she is at the police station with Matt Murray, the lead investigator guy, and this guy, John Jones, who like brought her to her interview.
So her ex-boyfriend, John Jones, who is a police officer, mm-hmm, brings her to her own interview and then sits in on the interview. And then that guy, Mark Murray,
yeah,
present day, says
she wanted that and that was accommodated. To do it over again, probably would have done it differently, but it definitely didn't affect the investigation, in my opinion.
But it didn't affect the investigation anyway. So he says.
Red flag all over the goddamn place.
But also, this guy John isn't sitting there just like hanging back, letting her do it. He is physically touching her,
yeah,
the entire time in a very obvious way, holding her hand. I mean, this is either an intimidation tactic or he wants to navigate waters in a certain way,
uh-huh,
but he wants to be calling the shots here, and it's very clear. So they tell her, look, we're really interested in your ex-boyfriend, Nick Hillary.
Yeah.
And then we like kind kind of flash back in time to 2.5 hours after Garrett's death, because Nick Hillary has already been contacted by the lead investigator, Murray.
Right.
And so now we start to learn about Nick Hillary.
So this is where I have like, oh my God, we actually see him. Like, I didn't know if he was going to be in this or not. He's sitting at home, cool as a cucumber, like talking to the camera.
Living his life.
But so like, we learn about this Nick Hillary guy. Number one, he's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Number two, he's like this like big deal soccer coach at a local college. He was a student at St. Lawrence College, and he did so well. He was like a star on the soccer team.
Yeah.
Now he coaches the team at another college. He's like a pillar of the community. Everybody really likes him.
Yeah, in college, he lived in something called the House of Brotherhood, and it was like all of his Jamaican teammates, and they were like celebrities. They were like good guys, real, like just fun to be around, just good people, and incredible on the soccer field.
And one of the guys who lived in this house with him was a guy named Manny Tafari. Remember him.
I love him.
I love him too.
So now we learn like how Nick met Tandy.
You know, I met Tandy in 2010. I would normally hang out with the coaches from the college, you know, after work or after a game. I'll sit at the bar, or she was a bartender. She would admire what I was doing, and she would ask questions, and, you know, she played soccer, so she understood, you know, the language and what I was doing. So that's how my meeting of Tandy all came about, was during that time period.
They met at like a local bar called Half Tons.
Sure. Yeah, it was like Nick's happy hour bar with his teammates, and Tandy was the bartender, and they like really hit it off. And we get like a lot of texts and emails about like they can't stop thinking about each other. They really love each other. Like,
but wait, I have a question about this.
Yeah.
They address each other in the emails and text messages as Miss Cyrus and Mr. Hillary.
Yeah.
Why?
Maybe it's like, you know how couples have little, I don't know. Maybe it's like a thing that they,
why don't
you
call me Mr. Hines?
Because I'm not in a relationship with you.
You're in a kind of a relationship with me.
But not in like a lovey nickname-y relationship. You know?
Right? Yeah. I was so caught off guard by that. I was like, it was very like Sound of Music to me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
So the thing about Tandy and Nick is that Tandy's got two kids and Nick has three kids.
Right.
And they decide, I guess kind of quickly, like the lesbian stock that I come from,
sure,
they were going to move in together real fast.
They're going to Brady Bunch it.
Yes.
And put the whole family together in this like big, beautiful house they found.
Yes, exactly.
So then they end up breaking up though, because the kids were getting harassed because it was an interracial relationship. So like her boys were getting bullied, and
right,
so they didn't like Nick because Nick was the reason they were being bullied at school, because kids are horrible.
And obviously I would not like that for my child, and I don't think it was fair for her and her son to have to experience that. And I think that was one of the root cause as to why we made the decision that, you know, it would be best if she has her own aboard and I have my own aboard.
When you really zoom out and you're like, everyone was so happy, they were so good for each other, it just makes me so mad.
Yeah, that's, let's get mad about
it. Yeah, that's what we're here for.
God.
Why did we call this podcast Let's Get Mad About
It? I'm like really into being mad today.
I know.
Like, I'm happy to be mad today.
That's how we do.
Is that weird?
No, it's great.
Great. So they stopped living together. They would each have their own homes, but they were still kind of hanging out.
So speaking of them each having their own homes, when Tandy decided to move out, that guy, John Jones, he knows everyone in town. He knows everyone with apartments, and he gets her set up at that apartment at 100 Center Street.
I looked at it as the convenience of not being close to me. It was the convenience for the boys. I guess I always put the boys first.
Oh, it had nothing to do with getting her closer to me.
Uh-huh.
The lady doth protest too goddamn much.
Yeah.
I was like, no one was thinking that but you, girl.
Yeah.
He also says this really annoying thing where he's like, I didn't think that she and Nick Hillary were still seeing each other, but I was enlightened that they were seeing each other. Okay. He says enlightened.
Yeah. He's like a super violent racist. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to be alone in a room with this guy.
1,000,000%.
Also, he should be a little nervous to be alone in a room with me. How about that? Whatever. I took Muay Thai.
I'm a little nervous to be alone in a room with you, if we're being honest.
No. Look, you're not on my list yet.
Not yet.
Very easy to get on, impossible to get off.
We've got like 30 years to go, so let's...
Hey, look, don't tell me. You better... tread lightly. So now we're back to 2.5 hours after Garrett's death. And the police go to interview Nick Hillary at his home.
That was the first time I learned that he had passed that night when the cops came to my apartment and told me that he had passed away. I was at a loss for words. And I frantically started figuring out, you know, reaching out to Tandy, reaching out to the family members, trying to find out what was going on. So I was making phone calls.
Everything Nick is telling us, he's being honest. Like, right. I'm not a polygraph machine.
No, he's got nothing to hide.
No, and it's like there's a way that when people have a script that they tell.
Totally.
He's just not telling a script. Like, yeah. He's telling the truth.
Yeah, totally. So he calls his friend Manny, who's a former teammate, and you guys, current lawyer.
Yes, so Manny is a lawyer, and we're obsessed with him.
We love him. So Manny's like, oh, dude, like, something is happening. It is not normal for the cops to give an in-person death notification to an ex-boyfriend.
Right.
You in danger, girl.
You in danger, girl.
And then he told me, you know, the cops came and told him, and right there, that was when, you know, the lawyer and me kicked off, and I thought there was something very strange about that.
Poor Nick is just like, I just want to talk about this emotional thing that happened. Like, he's being a good guy and just like, I just need to get it out to a friend.
Yeah, and then he's
like, friend and also lawyer? Right. No, this is not good.
But remember John Jones, super problematic John Jones? It cuts back to John Jones and just straight to camera, John Jones says,
no doubt in my mind he did it. And I don't base that strictly on wanting to say it's him. I base it on the knowledge of many of the guys I work with in law enforcement that investigated this and put 20 hours plus a day into trying to find the right person to put to this. And each one of them told me, Nick's the guy.
He's giving us all this bullshit about all of his boys in blue that the 20 hours a day they all worked on this case and they chased down every lead and they looked at other suspects and they didn't.
No, they didn't.
They didn't look at anybody else. They only looked at this Nick Hillary guy, and we're going to get to why in just a second.
Yep.
So now we meet this New York Times reporter who gives us like sort of like information on this area.
So we learn it's very sheltered. You can get a house for super cheap. There's a real economic crisis happening. High unemployment, lots of drugs. You guys, like heroin drugs, like meth drugs.
Yeah.
At one point, someone's like, they're cooking meth all over the place. And I'm like, oh my God. And then we hear from Natasha Haverty. She's another reporter. And she's like, yeah, so it's really white. And it's situated in New York's prison country. So like she says,
it's a community in an area that kind of like its lifeblood is corrections. And we think about racial dynamics, how a lot of white people's only interactions with black people are when they're in a uniform as a corrections officer, guarding inmates of color. It's just something to keep in mind.
Just something to keep in mind. We definitely like have way too many people of color in prison.
Uh-huh.
And this is a white town. Just something to think about. That's it. And they say like it's a big college town too.
Yeah.
So you've got this really interesting dynamic where you do have a certain conservative rural bent to it. Driving up here, you see a Confederate flag here and there. But then you also have, you know, college bars and college activities and more kind of liberal-seeming functions going on around you.
Can I say, I literally stood up in my chair at this point when they were talking about the Confederate flags. Look, Confederate flags are never okay, ever.
No.
They're the worst thing ever.
No.
But, like, can someone please tell the fucking people of upstate New York that it was never part of the Confederacy?
No, yeah, we won the war.
You're literally 14 minutes from Canada.
Yeah.
I literally was screaming at the top of my lungs, and then I actually gave a goog to the Confederate states. Because I was like, let me just make sure that upstate New York was never a part of the
Confederacy. It makes you feel crazy. You were right. It was the North versus the South.
Right.
Anyway, back to John Jones. We learned that John Jones and Tandy were living together when Tandy and Nick Hillary started, quote, socializing.
Okay, did this stand out to you too? Because John Jones actually says,
when Tandy and I started having real difficulties towards the end, I was trying to figure out, you know, what's going on, what's happening, and Nick's name was brought up a couple times, and I just happened to be at the right place, I guess at the right time, to see the two of them drive by one early morning.
He was following her.
He was stalking them.
He was 1,000,000% stalking them.
Oh, no, I have a whole thing about this in my notes, because it's like, he's like, yeah, you know, very early one morning, you don't just happen to notice two people driving past you at 5 a.m.
No,
or whatever.
Unless you're staked out.
Right. And he's like, look, you know, I saw them. I just happened to see them. And I thought to myself, great, now I can move on and start dating. No, you were stalking them. But then just when you think it couldn't get any, like, you were stalking them and you're telling us this, he says, so I confronted Nick at his residence. What? And it's also that cop speak.
Totally.
I confronted him at his residence. No, you showed up to the dude's house and you threatened him.
Yeah, and Nick is like, I was just hanging out with this girl. We weren't in a relationship.
Yeah, Nick Hillary was like about to be separated from his wife. So they were like, he was living with his wife.
Right. But then the other thing is that then John Jones goes to Nick Hillary's wife, Stacia. Everybody says her name wrong.
Yeah.
It's pronounced Stacia.
Stacia.
He goes to Stacia and he's like, oh, hey, you're cool with the fact that your husband is like hanging out with and probably sleeping with that bartender from that local bar.
Such a shit stir.
Yeah.
So just like, oh, hey, like, oh, what, did you just happen to run into Stacia too? No, you tracked her down to cause drama.
But the best is that Stacia is not taking this lying down.
No. So Tandy and Stacia were not cordial. There's some domestic incidents that happened in the interim, one in which Stacia was arrested for cutting up his clothes and dropping them off on the lawn of his apartment.
Stacia takes all of Nick Hillary's clothes and cuts them into pieces.
And throws them on the lawn.
Just stop cheating on each other, everybody.
I know. Yeah, there's some blurry timelines here. Yeah. But again, it's like bigger fish to fry. What about the timeline of when someone killed a 12-year-old kid? Like, that's
I totally agree.
I care about.
So basically, where we are, everybody, now Nick is dating the sheriff's ex-girlfriend. Like, this is not gonna go great.
Yeah, and the sheriff is not stable.
Right, no.
At all.
Yeah.
And a little obsessive and definitely a stalker.
Girl, this message is sponsored by Greenlight. We all know this. Greenlight is the debit card and money app for families that helps kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely.
Yeah, and also the parents are involved too. Yeah. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on kids' spending and saving.
So this is, I say this every week. We have this with Daisy. I love it. You can customize the debit card. We've got a picture of Golden on it. I love talking to Daisy about money. I never had any of that financial planning when I was a kid. Nobody taught me anything. I love getting to like go over the app with Daisy. She can see what's in her account. She can see us using the allowance feature, so she sees that she gets her allowance every week, and then we can talk about what she wants to save for and what she wants to spend her money on.
It's demystifying it.
It is,
you
for
know?
Sure.
And then kids and teens, too, can build money confidence and skills in a more fun and accessible way.
Exactly. And maybe, girl, that's why millions of parents and kids just like me and Steve and Daisy are already learning about money on Greenlight, the number one family finance safety app.
Yeah, they also have the chores feature, where you can set up one-time or recurring chores. You can customize it to your household. You can reward kids with an allowance for a job well done. We're all keeping track.
She asks about it every single week. Every Friday as we're getting into the weekend, it's macaroni and cheese and Greenlight time.
Look, girl after my own heart.
So fam, start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/TCO.
That's greenlight.com/TCO to get started.
Greenlight.com/TCO and customize that debit card.
That's right.
Girl, Quince is back. Look, we know that we love them for the sweaters and the clothing and the bags, but we are talking about the travel essentials made by Quince. High quality. I'm traveling all the time. I am obsessed.
Yeah, high quality, fair prices.
Yeah,
totally. Just want to clarify that.
Like all Quince items, these items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
Yeah, and they only work with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. But here's what they have for your travel accessories now.
Don't I know all about it?
You love this one, the expandable carry-on hard shell suitcase.
This I live by. I only travel with this when I'm on the road.
And they have it in a lot of sizes, like 21-inch, whatever you need, a lot of different colors.
They've also got this washable carry-on luggage cover. You know how all your carry-ons look exactly the same?
Yeah.
Yours now stands out.
Yeah, and you can clean it instead of wiping it down. It's like a washable cover.
Nothing in the world is more filthy than the baggage carousel at an airport.
Disgusting. They also have packing cubes. They have a jewelry case, a toiletry bag, and my favorite, the Revive Nylon Camera Crossbody. Again, you can take it and look cute in your airport fit.
They do everything I love. The sweaters, the bags, the luggage. Oh my God.
Amazing.
So fam, for your next trip, treat yourself to luxe upgrades you deserve from Quince.
Go to quince.com/TCO for 365-day returns plus free shipping on your order.
That's quince.com/TCO to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/TCO.
So we're back to Tandy's first police interview, that filmed interview that we see where John Jones is like just touching her the entire time and trying to run the show. So it's at the end, everyone's getting up to leave. So John Jones and the lead detective guy, Mark Murray or whatever, they're speaking in like hushed tones.
Uh-huh.
And they don't really want people to overhear or see what they're doing. And Mark starts writing things down. Tandy is not in this conversation.
Uh-huh.
Just John Jones is like saying some stuff to Mark.
The buildup Tuesday night into Wednesday morning is, you know, we got to talk to Nick again. There's just too much. There's too much stuff here. You know, we're clearing everybody else as, you know, either alibied or precluded for a number of reasons. We've got to find out there's more to this with Nick's involvement.
Then we get Tandy's written statement.
Right.
And this is when Nick says outright to us, like, in a zillion years, I would never think that she would throw me under the bus like this.
He's like, she knows me. She knows my heart. Like, she knows I am not capable of doing this.
And he's like, it's very clear to me that she was intimidated and manipulated by the people in that room. Because in her statement, she's like, you know, looking back, Nick was always awful and always wanted to hurt Garrett and all this stuff. And it's like, that's just not true.
Yeah. In case we need to drive this point home, the cop ex-boyfriend is just trying to get rid of the current boyfriend.
Right.
That's what he's trying to do.
That's it. That's what he's been doing for years.
Yeah.
So we're back to Manny, the lawyer. And then we meet his wife, Lisa, also a lawyer.
I know.
They're amazing. They work together. They're attorneys. I'm obsessed.
I know.
So Lisa gives us some really crucial information here.
Officer Murray had put in his sworn affidavit to get a search warrant, right? So it's sworn to that he observed Mr. Hillary with a significant limp.
The day after the murder,
while he was coaching a soccer game. And I guess to him, this shows that he could have jumped out the window and injured himself.
He's trying to say that he's the guy who jumped out the window. So then we cut to video of that game.
Oh my God. And the two lawyers, Manny and his wife, tell us, like, we didn't get this video until years later.
Right.
But we're seeing the video now.
And Nick is in ship shape.
Hillary is walking very well, and he beats a bunch of 19 and 20 year olds to the locker room at halftime. So why would a police officer in the middle of a murder case only the day after make up a story about a significant limp when he knows that there's none?
Nick was fine. He didn't have a limp. You guys, cut to Murray, the investigator, today with a straight face is like...
There's points in time where he looks like he's walking perfectly fine, and there's points in time where you wonder if he's trying to conceal or he's got a sore leg. It's significant to me. Like, that looks like he's favoring his right leg.
Don't you see the limp? Yeah. It's as clear as day. And I'm like, oh, this guy, he's going to make me crazy. So then, like, by October 26th, the police show up to Nick's door. And he's on the phone with Manny, the lawyer friend. And Manny's like, dude, they're about to frame my friend for murder.
It wasn't alarm bells as much as, an explosion that went off in my brain. And I knew right then, right there, that they were about to frame Nick Hillary for murder.
And you guys, they do.
So now we get on-screen text that Mark Murray and Gary Snell, they get Nick Hillary to come down to the station. And the purpose of the meeting is to go over a student roster of Garrett's class.
Right, that's like, what they say. That's what they tell Nick.
Yeah, that's how they get him down there without a lawyer, without a fight. And Nick is like, I just want to do whatever I can do to help. Like, of course I'm going
to
go.
Right, but he also says, like, look, as a person of color, you're always told not to talk to the police.
Yep.
But he goes, I didn't have anything to hide, and I want to help. I do care about this person, unlike John Jones.
Yeah.
So this whole thing, this is the rest of this episode. And it is so infuriating. So they're talking to Nick about Tandy.
Yeah.
And everything they say, they're just trying to bait this guy. This Nick Hillary thinks he's going to look at a roster of students.
Uh-huh.
And then they just start questioning him. And so they're trying to make it like that it was like this really emotional, hostile breakup. And he's like, it wasn't.
Did you break up with her? Did she break up with you? What's the deal with that? Separated.
It's not one of those relationships where people break up and there's hostility. You know, it was never like that. Quite the opposite. You know, so it was very surprising to me to have learned all these stories as to what was going on with our relationship.
What they're trying to plant is that Garrett didn't like Nick.
Mm-hmm.
So Garrett is the thing standing in the way of Nick being able to get Tandy back.
Right.
And so Nick had to kill him. That's where we're going with this.
Right. So now we're back to the Nick interview. And Mark is asking Nick all these questions, like, about his kids and, like, picking him up from school.
You usually pick up your kids from school, your daughter, or she goes to the high school, or she walks home, she goes to the high school. And what's her name?
I think this is what stops Nick dead in his tracks. This is when he knows for sure he's not there to identify, like, other kids.
Right, and he's like, Mark, like, not to be a dick about it, but, like, what is this?
Mark, I'm not trying to be a creep like you, but you actually come down here to look at others. And you guys are actually tone of down questions. Okay. I don't mind answering questions, but if I answer questions, I need to know pertaining to what.
You asked me to come down and look at a list, and now you're questioning me. I'm happy to answer all your questions. I just need to know what the context is here.
Right.
Why am I here? And I'm like, say the word lawyer.
I know.
Just say the word lawyer.
He's being so agreeable. Like, he's being too agreeable.
Right. Like, he should not be questioned without a lawyer, and the cops know that.
Right.
The cops know that 100%, and they're just trying to take advantage of this guy's niceness for as long as possible. And then they do the thing. You guys, like, it's just, we see this so many. He's like, oh, you know, we're just trying to eliminate you. You're not a suspect, but we're trying to eliminate you. That statement makes no sense.
But this is when Nick starts to say, say no comment. They're like, what were you doing on Monday? And Nick's like, I know, but I'm not going to tell you. Like, no comment. No. And this is where this is where it starts to get really tense.
Right.
Between Nick and the cops.
Let's not turn nasty. I'm not. What's your name again?
Gary.
Gary. Gary's on the
street.
Police. Police for 20 years. Okay, great. This is an understandable.
And then they read him his rights.
Right. So this is the best part. They actually read him his rights, and now Nick knows shit's going down.
While also saying he's not under arrest. You're not under arrest, but you have the right to remain. Like, what are you, like,
I know.
What am I watching? Like, they're gaslighting him. They're gaslighting us. Uh-huh. It's insane.
So they're talking to him. Nick pulls out his phone, and while they're, like, they're sort of getting aggressive with him, Nick is just talking on the phone.
He calls Manny, his lawyer friend.
I know. And one of the cops is like, are you on the phone?
And he's like, yeah.
All right, you just read me my letter, yeah. Right? And I'm going to make my 6 minutes. You know what I'm saying? Are you going to call somebody?
Because Nick says the magic words. He goes, I'm going to implement my Sixth Amendment rights, which means I want a lawyer.
But
it's the fanciest way possible.
The cop goes, meaning what? And Nick goes, you know what the Sixth Amendment is. And
you
the
know.
Cop goes silent. The cop, yeah. Like, does not know what this. I actually had to look up the Sixth Amendment.
I wanted to make sure. But he asked for a lawyer in the most formal way possible. And I think that was also a way for Manny to be like, he's on the phone with someone who knows their shit.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
just say I want a lawyer. Say you are implementing your Sixth Amendment rights, because that is a little bit of a statement there.
Do you remember when I had to Google earlier if New York was one of the Confederate states?
I know. So then we get his assistant coach and his friend Ian, and he's being questioned too.
Ian is Nick's best friend. He's being interviewed separately.
Because Ian is also Nick's alibi.
So this is where we learn that.
Yeah.
He says, is he the kind of guy that would create an alibi using you? And the assistant coach guy is like, what are you talking about?
Like, what?
Keep getting asked, how do you know he didn't do it? Well, if he did do it, then I saw him a minute later. He was the same person I've always met. Just walked in and was like, hey, going to the office. Got this meeting. You're going to be right behind me? Yeah. Be right there. Just every other day.
So they're trying to get Ian to either say, one, he wasn't really there at work. He lied. I'm not his alibi.
Yeah.
Or they're trying to get Ian to say, yeah, he was there, but he acted really differently, almost as if he just committed a murder. Ian's not saying either of those things because either of them are true.
And this is where we find out that the alibi is airtight. Because
right.
The cops are saying at 5:21 is when the guy, the murderer, jumped out that window.
Mm-hmm.
At 5:21, this assistant coach was on the phone. So they can actually check that against the phone records.
Right.
And at 5:21 is also when he'd been saying, even before he knew this was Nick's alibi, Nick walked in when I was on this phone call.
So I'm his alibi. I'm why he can't be there, because he was here at 5:21, which is something they grilled me on, you know, a lot throughout the whole process.
However, Murray, the lead investigator guy,
yeah.
is like, well, obviously he made a fake phone call to have an alibi, you guys. Obviously. And
right.
I'm like, girl, boy, you are reaching.
Yeah.
Girl, this message is sponsored by Greenlight. We all know this. Greenlight is the debit card and money app for families that helps kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely.
Yeah, and also the parents are involved too.
Yes.
Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on kids' spending and saving.
So this is, I say this every week. We have this with Daisy. I love it. You can customize the debit card. We've got a picture of Golden on it. I love talking to Daisy about money. I never had any of that financial planning when I was a kid. Nobody taught me anything. I love getting to like go over the app with Daisy. She can see what's in her account. She can see us using the allowance feature, so she sees that she gets her allowance every week, and then we can talk about what she wants to save for and what she wants to spend her money on.
It's demystifying it.
It is,
you
for
know?
Sure.
And then kids and teens, too, can build money confidence and skills in a more fun and accessible way.
Exactly. And maybe, girl, that's why millions of parents and kids, just like me and Steve and Daisy, are already learning about money on Greenlight, the number one family finance safety app.
Yeah, they also have the chores feature, where
yep.
you can set up one-time or recurring chores. You can customize it to your household. You can reward kids with an allowance for a job well done. We're all keeping track.
She asks about it every single week.
I would.
Every Friday as we're getting into the weekend, it's macaroni and cheese and Greenlight time.
Girl after my own heart.
So fam, start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/TCO.
That's greenlight.com/TCO to get started.
Greenlight.com/TCO and customize that debit card.
That's right.
Girl, Quince is back. Look, we know that we love them for the sweaters and the clothing and the bags, but we are talking about the travel essentials made by Quince. High quality. I'm traveling all the time. I am obsessed.
Yeah, high quality, fair prices.
Yeah, totally.
Just want to clarify that.
Like all Quince items, these items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
Yeah, and they only work with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. But here's what they have for your travel accessories now.
Don't I know all about it?
You love this one, the expandable carry-on hard-shell suitcase.
This I live by. I only travel with this when I'm on the road.
And they have it in a lot of sizes, like 21-inch, whatever yes, you need, yes. A lot of different colors.
They've also got this washable carry-on luggage cover. You know how all your carry-ons look exactly the same?
Yeah.
Yours now stands out.
Yeah, and you can clean it instead of wiping it down. It's like a washable cover.
Nothing in the world is more filthy than the baggage carousel.
Disgusting. They also have packing cubes. They have a jewelry case, a toiletry bag, and my favorite, the Revive Nylon Camera Crossbody. Again, you can take it and look cute in your airport fit.
They do everything I love. The sweaters, the bags, the luggage. Oh my God.
Amazing.
So, fam, for your next trip, treat yourself to luxe upgrades you deserve from Quince.
Go to quince.com/TCO for 365-day returns plus free shipping on your order.
That's quince.com/TCO to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/TCO.
So now we're back to Nick, who he just called a lawyer. He said the magic word lawyer. And I'm like, he is still having a conversation with the cops. Like, how is this? They are just disregarding everything they should be doing.
Yeah.
And so now the conversation is, remember how Nick got there to like confirm a student roster?
Uh-huh.
Now they're saying things like, look, I don't think you went over there to kill him.
This has gone on long enough, okay? I'm here in the game, okay? I don't think that you went there with any intention to harm me. I don't think you did.
And this is where I have, and this shit goes off the rails.
And then they just start actually arguing.
Yeah.
They're just fighting. And so now Nick is trying to leave. He's standing up. He's trying to leave.
It's been made clear to him 40 times he's not under arrest.
No.
And they say to him 40 times, you can leave anytime.
And then they're like, well, no, we're not going to let you leave without knowing exactly when we can talk to you again. And he's like, no.
Right.
Like, absolutely not. So he finally gets up, and Mark, that Murray guy, that investigator, he goes, there's a dead kid, Nick. Like, don't you want to help? And I'm like, oh.
He's also, this guy, Mark Murray, is standing between Nick and the door.
Yeah, and so is that other guy, Gary Snell. So they're physically intimidating him. They're blocking the door. They're not letting him leave. And today, Nick, to us, is like,
knowing my right that I could walk out of there and being barred and blocked physically, you leave me one choice, which is to either put my hand on you to ask you to leave or bull my way through the door, which those two options provide me nothing good in return. So obviously I have succumbed to what you guys are doing and knowing intentionally what you're doing and just sit there.
Either I put my hands on a cop,
yep.
Or I get aggressive and they put me in a position where I am forced to stay.
So the thing about this, Nick does everything right in this situation. He somehow has the presence of mind to know, don't touch these guys.
Yeah.
If I touch them, I'm under arrest.
Yeah, and it's over for him.
Yep,
like, exactly. This story's done.
Yep. And I don't know how you keep your cool like that, because what would it be like if it were me?
Screaming. Yeah. I mean, it's just, he says it too. He's like, as a person of color, like, there are things that he just knows to do.
I know.
Or things that he's been told, and now he's in this position and he's implementing them.
And they tell him at this point that they are now applying for a search warrant to be able to photograph his body.
And the thing is, like, they don't have an actual leg to stand on, so they're going on emotion. They're like, don't you want to know what happened? Don't you care about Garrett?
And they say to him, look, we've got a press conference in 15 minutes. We can either say we're still looking, we don't have any leads, or we can say we've got a person in custody.
Right.
Like, what do you want to work with us, or you want to work against us?
Right.
This is when we learned that, like, Nick has called Manny, his lawyer, who's a friend. He's also called a local lawyer. And it's like, at different points, we see Nick on the phone trying to get Manny, and no one's answering. And that's when I'm like, oh my God, why aren't you answering your goddamn fucking phone?
And then the cops are saying the same thing. Oh my God, when is Manny going to answer the phone? They take Nick Hillary's phone.
Okay. Nick, yeah. Where is your phone? Give it to me now.
Why have to give my phone?
Because we're going to end up taking it. So you're done with the phone calls. You talk to your lawyer. Everybody's going to move your phone.
I can't just give you my phone. Please?
No. You got to give it to me.
She's going to be calling me back.
Well, she can call here at the TV.
I'm sure that that's illegal. They cannot just take his phone.
So they took his phone. They're blocking the door.
Yeah.
I just have, it's all exclamation points and just like letters, because I couldn't like actually type words out.
Because he's waiting for a call back from his lawyer. The phone rings.
Hey, could I answer that, please? No. Allow me the opportunity, please. Allow me the opportunity.
Let me answer that. And they won't give him the phone back.
Right. And he's saying it in like the least aggressive way that he, like, it's such such bullshit he has to do that. He's like, will you please give me the opportunity to answer my own phone that you took away from me?
Yeah.
You guys, Manny, God bless him, leaves New York City and gets upstate as fast as he can. It's a 7-hour drive.
It's just insane.
He just leaves.
Yeah.
He's like, Lisa, love of my life, I love you. I gotta go help my friend. And she's like, girl, you should have left 2 hours ago.
From that moment on, I mean, there has not been a day that has passed that Nick Hillary has not been discussed over our morning coffee or our nighttime glass of wine. I mean, it's been.
Well, it consumes you. Yeah. It's in for a penny, in for a pound. It's nothing that we planned on getting this much involved in, but, you know, we had to act and we had to move in order to help Nick.
So this is where we find out that, like, his local lawyer has shown up and the cops get the search warrant that they were seeking to photograph his body. This is when we're starting to see Nick in various stages of undress.
You guys, they strip search him.
They literally make him take his clothes off, like one article of clothing at a time.
Right.
And honestly, this was so disturbing to me because they are photographing his naked body. Mm-hmm. And we see some of the pictures. And I don't know how that's legal or even ethical for the filmmakers to show us that, because the whole thing was, it was all about humiliation to begin with. They weren't looking for evidence. They were trying to humiliate him and let him know that they had the power.
Because this is all done in that guy Murray's office.
Exactly.
It's not official. Like, yeah. You see, like, his stupid framed pictures in the background.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, I think Nick gave the okay to Liz Garbus. I don't think Liz Garbus, director of There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think she would do. I mean, I think he was just like, yeah, let's let everyone know how these cops fucked it up and how awful they are.
It was really kind of upsetting for me to see that.
Right.
But then that garbage Murray guy, he's saying to us,
there were other people that were photographed nude as well. And I pointed that out in the deposition.
And the filmmaker says, oh, girl, who else? Meaning, were there other suspects? Who are they?
Because he's like, I said that in the deposition, but whatever. No one seems to care about the fact that I said that.
Right.
And so Liz is like, well, who? Knowing the answer.
Yeah.
Who else was photographed
nude? And Garrett Phillips was.
Well, Garrett Phillips. And I'm like, okay, no.
Which is so...
Yeah.
It's so garbagey and disgusting.
Because
like, this dead boy who's been brutally murdered. Like, did Murray actually think we weren't going to ask who the other, quote, suspects were?
Right. He's like, no, other people were photographed nude, everybody. But
yeah.
He's saying it in a way that's like, I didn't say the word suspects, did I?
Right,
I just said
right,
there were
yeah,
other
yeah.
nude photographs taken.
Oh, fucking horrible. And so this is where Manny, the lawyer, is telling us, like, you know, Nick did the best he could under the circumstances, because what the police wanted more than anything was to see Nick flinch. They wanted him to refuse mm-hmm. to be photographed with his clothes off.
Or like resist arrest or
because
put his hands
that
on
would,
a cop.
It would be resisting arrest. If you refuse to comply with a search warrant, it would be resisting arrest. They could arrest him. And you know that if this guy was thrown in jail and thrown into the system, he never would have come out.
Right. So 8 hours later, they let him leave in a fucking hazmat suit because they took all of his clothes as evidence.
Yeah.
Think about that.
So this is where we are at the end, right? Where like Nick is like leaving, having been humiliated, nakedly photographed in front of all these people.
Right.
He's leaving the police station in a hazmat suit. Like, what is going to happen?
Yeah. And so we get all the cops being like, yeah, well, it's just he did it because we said it.
Right. Why isn't he going along with it like they always do?
No, bitch.
I know.
Not here. Not today. Not on TCO.
You guys, just a reminder, you can get episode 2 of this right now. It's at the $5 level ad-free on the Pates on
yeah,
Patreon.
Yeah, Lady Pates.
And it'll be the regular episode next week.
Yeah, with ads.
Yeah. Our ads are awesome, by the way.
Yeah, just saying.
You guys, just a reminder, if you want more of Jillian and me, or you want to just get part 2 of this ad-free right now,
yeah.
Join the Patreon.
Yeah, get mad with us, you know?
Get mad. 100 full bonus episodes to download a binge right this second.
Yep, The Staircase, Making a Murderer, Madonna's Truth or Dare.
Lorena. The Staircase, Serial Season 1.
OJ, Lacey Peterson, Jodi Arias. There's a lot.
Disappears of Madeline McCann.
Yeah, nothing happens in that one, but we covered it for you. We talk a lot. Shit happens here between us.
It's true.
But nothing really happened in the documentary.
I can't even stump you with what are we doing next, because we're doing part 2 of this next week.
Yeah, I know the answer.
I know.
I like knowing.
Girl, tell the people where they can find us.
They can find us at truecrimeobsessed.com. They can find us at True Crime Obsessed Podcast on Instagram, at True Crime Obsessed, no ED, on Twitter.
Yeah. You guys, stay tuned for the outtakes. The outtakes are going to be good, and we don't really have a trailer to play because it's just part 2 of this for next week.
Yeah. Are you mad yet? How mad are you?
I'm really, this honestly, this yeah. made me really mad.
Well, I mean, the fact that it's like 40 minutes of just watching like horrible, like just,
I know.
It's almost in slow motion. We're like, did they just take the phone? Oh my God, they took the phone.
I know.
Oh my God, they're blocking the door. Like, just when you think it can't get worse,
I know.
Here we are.
We love you.
We love you. Thanks so much.
All right, bye.
Bye.
A tro-riotous.
Uh-huh. That's it. That's my drag name.
Are we saying Potsdam or Potsdam?
Oh, God.
Just pick one. They'll be fine. Marissa's not going to be mad.
Yeah.
She's never gotten mad in her life. There's a bridge we drive over every time we leave the city, uh-huh. and it's called Jerome's Dam Bridge, like Jerome, like dam, like a dam that like beavers make.
Like Jerome's Dam.
Yeah, but the GPS lady, so I was like, head over Jerome's Dam Bridge.
Yeah, this goddamn bridge. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I love shit like that.
And it's
the
every
goddamn
time.
Bridge, Jerome. Jerome and his damn bridge at it again.
I like don't even have a list.
Oh God, yes you do. There are people that you just don't like.
I'm trying to think.
I can start naming them. You don't have to bleep it, but I can definitely start naming names of people you just don't like.
Yeah, that's true. Because I cannot imagine a worse life than being a goddamn landlord.
Right.
That would be the worst, all hours of the night.
Is that why they're so terrible most of the time?
It's always me calling being like, I saw a cockroach and it is not my job to get it out of here. You come here and get
you
rid of this
it.
Cockroach.
Do it.
There was the Onion headline this week that is being shared all over Facebook. It says, cockroaches feeling really good about the trajectory of the planet.
Oh, God. I hate everything about them. Are they dead yet? I want them to be dead.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.